This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 2nd of November 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. On today's show, we're asking, how popular are graphic novels? Once upon a time, we used to think of them as comic strips, stories with pictures for the slow ones. A little bit childish, or a lot nerdish. But we didn't really get it, did we? Graphic novels are now the money-making, reputation-swelling hot properties of the literary world. But once before, it was boys' bedrooms and saucy manga. It's now the stuff of the literary salon, the review pages, and the beautifully printed hardback edition. To answer our question of just how popular graphic novels are, we'll speak to Emma Haley, founder of Self-Made Hero, on why on earth you'd start such an unlikely business. We'll speak to Waterstones, the largest book retailing chain in the UK, about the rise of the graphic novel, and we'll speak to one of the masters of the art. It's only Carrie Fransman herself.
I've read graphic novels from, you know, Korea, Malaysia, all over the world in a way which I've not read books from those countries, so it kind of opened your eyes to voices from everywhere.
So a strong showing to answer this week's poser, that is, how popular are graphic novels? That's all on this week's edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. We'll start the show by speaking to Emma Haley, founder, managing director and publisher of Self-Made Hero, a wonderful British-based graphic novel publisher that launched in 2007 in a print landscape that was a bit doomy and gloomy. People thought that tablets would be a good idea, remember that? But Haley's clever nose for commissioning unusual, beautifully told, engagingly drawn books, both fiction and non, made Self-Made Hero stand out straight away. From big-name graphic novelists like Scott McCloud to Shakespeare down as manga, to a book about the troubled relations between the United States and the Middle East, Self-Made Hero started as it meant to go on. Here's Emma Haley.
I started Self-Made Hero in 2007, and it was in response to the growing market, and it was manga and graphic novels in particular that was really the fastest rising part of the book industry at the time. So at that point where other sort of sectors of publishing were being forced out or going digital, and people are wondering what's happening, what's the publishing industry going to come to, the graphic novel and manga market were really on the rise. And so I came up with the idea of Manga Shakespeare. And
this is kind of one of your greatest hits. Isn't it? I mean, this is one of the this is one of the bottles of champagne that broke across the bows of this great ship, Self-Made Hero, right? To begin with,
right? That's right. Yeah, it was an idea that just seemed to take off. It was the right time. It was the right time because manga was just a booming market. It was booming amongst kids. There were more and more festivals related to manga at the time. There were after-school clubs related to manga. And I thought, at the time I was thinking, how can I bring Shakespeare alive in a different medium? And I thought, yep, Shakespeare and manga, that's going to work really, really well. Because also manga, it's kind of, you know, it's not performance, it's not straight prose, but it's quite a sort of happy medium, a happy bridge between both. So it worked quite well as a medium and as a way of bringing Shakespeare alive.
And I guess this is one of the things, and you've done this in other ways, your sort of artistic master's series kind of does the same. It sort of demystifies Goya or Picasso, whoever it might be, and breaks them down into more bite-sized pieces. I mean, strip-sized kind of storylines for them as well. Is this kind of a key thing, before we get on to graphic novel fiction, which I suppose is the kind of classic form, has become the classic form, is a kind of graphic novel a great place to teach, actually, as well? I mean, you know, to demystify things like Shakespeare or the old masters.
It is. There's sort of two answers to that. And I think the Manga Shakespeare series and our Art Masters series, I don't think they strip things to the core. I think in the Manga Shakespeare series, most of the words are there. They're abridged and it's the same original old language used. So it doesn't, in a way, dumb it down. And I'm very conscious of that with all of our books, actually. But yes, there is an educational element to it, of course, because it brings it to life in another medium. And so certainly for school kids who probably dread having to study Shakespeare, it helps them. Of course it does. With the Art Masters series, well, I mean, you know, if you look at our Pablo book,
that's beautiful.
Thank you. Yes, it is beautiful. And it's also around 350 pages. So it's long, you know, and a lot of our books are long. and aren't in bite-sized chunks at all. And
but I think that's more about it's that thing about engaging people in story rather than this sort of very didactic kind of. And in 1932, he painted Guernica. It's a very different. It's a very engaging kind of different thing that kind of jumps off the page rather than you having to kind of apply yourself to the page.
Yes, absolutely. And I think we've got another series called Best of Enemies, and that's about US and Middle Eastern relations. And that, I mean, you're talking about a really sort of complex history there, and it is brought to life through the images and the words. And I think that's one of the trends at the moment in the graphic novel world is nonfiction. And nonfiction graphic novels, they really sort of expand the audience for graphic novels in general.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, is this something, I mean, these are the expertise that actually newspapers could pick up on and kind of use actually to tell stories. Do you think some people maybe regard them as non-serious, even though they're about US Middle Eastern relations, that because they are in a strip form and because they're illustrations, somehow they're more cartoony. They're like the cartoon that's on the leader column of a newspaper, which are normally satirical, rather than the heaviosity of kind of news reportage.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of prejudice still, but I think over the last 10 years, a lot of that prejudice has been stripped away, particularly by major literary prizes like the Costa Awards. So a couple of years ago, two graphic novels were nominated for the Costa Awards, and one graphic novel won it in the biography series that was Daughter of Her Father's Eyes. And that was a very significant moment. It's the first time a graphic novel had won the Costa Book Award. So, you know, I think people are taking the graphic novel medium far more seriously than ever before. But there will always be people who will think graphic novel or think comic book and think, oh, that's for kids, isn't it? That's not for adults. But I think we've shown time and time again, particularly in what Self-Made Hero put out, is they're not just for children. They are about sophisticated subjects. We sort of cover a range, a sort of diverse range of topics, which are for adults.
And I'd love to ask you about talent spotting. I mean, with the authors and artists, often they're one and the same, which is the amazing skill, actually, for a lot of these people. How do you go about that? I mean, obviously, you started off with a small pool of people, and now there's so many titles. If anyone goes to your website, they can find all the amazing sorts of things. And a lot of the tricky subject matter that you take on as well. I mean, talking about the Best of Enemies book, for example. But take us back to the beginning. How do you start to know what's good and what might sell? Or are you kind of taking a punt all the time? Or at least you were to begin with.
Well, certainly was taking a punt on Manga Shakespeare.
Yeah.
It just worked. I was very, very lucky. It's really difficult, you know. I mean, every publisher
wants...
Is it
instinctive? Is it that thing?
It is instinctive. Yeah. I mean, but at the same time, I know that a certain book that we publish perhaps won't sell so much, but it just needs to be published because it's so good, but it might not have a huge commercial appeal. For any sort of small independent publisher like us, you know, you need a few hits, otherwise you can't carry on. You know, those hits can come in the form of already very well-known graphic novelists. We published, for example, Brian Lee O'Malley's book Seconds last year, which was a big seller for us. Mm. We had the UK rights for that. We published...
And Scott McCloud.
Book, The Sculptor this year. Again, huge, huge fan base. And so with hits like that, we can do other books that interest us and interest maybe a smaller number of people, but they're just really, really great stories. And I think in terms of what we choose or what I choose to commission, I choose to commission mainly, it starts with a story. It has to be a good story. And then the art comes.
People would be fascinated to hear this, not least of all me, actually, about how this works. I mean, if you're an author, you normally maybe you do a first chapter on spec and then a sketch of how the rest of the book might go. How does it work with graphic novels?
Yeah, I mean, we have a submissions process and it's on our website on selfmadehero.com. But generally, what we like to see is around 8 pages of fully rendered art and sequential, so in order, so that we can see that the artist can actually tell a story through their pictures, because that is a real talent. And I've worked with people, or I've had pitches from people who are brilliant artists and can do amazing characters and it all looks fabulous. But in terms of telling a story, it's a very different talent. And there are certain rules, and there's certain people can do it and certain people can't. So it's really seeing if the artist can tell a story through pictures and words. And then, you know, if the synopsis is good, obviously we ask for a synopsis, possibly a sample chapter, but that's not necessary.
And I wonder if you've ever found a fantastic artist or a fantastic storyteller, but they can't do the other thing. Have you ever paired people up with people? You should meet so-and-so. You know, they did a book for us 3 years ago. Maybe you could work together on something. Has that ever happened?
Or
are you less a doctor than a... You just take what's given to you and it's as good as it can be.
Well, at the beginning, we did a lot of that, pairing up people. Yeah. And so working with writers and artists and putting them together. As we've grown, though, we get a lot more pitches. And so if we get a pitch that is just by a writer and they haven't found an artist, it makes life more difficult for us because we can't immediately see their vision of it or the artist that they would want to work with. So we do less of that now. But we do work with writers and artists, and also we work with creators who will do both.
And, I mean, we talk about, you know, most novels, a lot of popular novels, but that was 300 pages long as a paperback, I guess. There's a certain amount of words, 80 to 100,000 words, whatever it might be. In terms of a graphic novel, I wonder if you're looking for something that is of that kind of, has that popular quality. When people hold it in their hands, just, you know, irrespective of the binding and the thickness of the paper and the thickness of the ink on it, which are all factors, I suppose, that there is something that is sort of the magic formula when you hold it in your hands that's attractive to read as a graphic novel.
Yeah, we tend to look for books that are usually over 100 pages. Mm. So 128 pages is is roughly, you know...
128 pages. It doesn't sound very rough.
No, it's a bit
129
rough.
Pages. I'm sorry, mate, you're out.
Yeah, it's like a film script, isn't it? I think, you know, producers look for
a
certain amount. Yeah,
yeah,
it's usually
and,
100 pages or something, isn't it? But yeah, usually it's 128 pages and, you know, it's a certain size. So our books tend to be around 170 by 240 millimetres. So if you're pitching to us, it's quite important to look at what series we do, so what genres we do, like we do sci-fi and horror, we do biography, we do original fiction, and we do non-fiction and humour. So it's quite important to look at the series we do and look at the page counts and the actual specs of them as well, yeah.
Is there an area that you'd like to do more of but you don't get enough submissions in? I mean, I've always loved that Best of Enemies book that we talked about at the beginning. Would you like to do more of that sort of non-fiction kind of newsy, issuesy, state of the world kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are doing more of that. Yeah. We've got a book launching this week, actually, called Filmish, and that's a book on film theory by Edward Ross. And I think these sorts of books do cross over to another audience, and they are more popular. And I think the graphic novel medium is a great way to get these sort of subjects across in a sort of, in a good way.
Presumably they're quite serializable as well, and they're kind of... Do you know what I mean? I mean, I guess there's lots of people want to, there's beautiful artwork, people want to run that, design websites and in newspapers. I mean, they're very kind of editorial friendly, I suppose.
They are editorial friendly. And I think we've seen a lot more coverage of our graphic novels in newspapers. I mean, we even got a review in The Sun, I think it was that last year, of one of our books. It's like, oh my God, we've crossed to The Sun.
Yeah, right.
Don't know if that's good or bad. But it's interesting that more and more people are looking at it, and more of a mainstream audiences are looking at the medium. And as you know, I mean, it is a medium that is continuing to grow.
Yeah. Well, how do you assess that? How do you assess the strength of the market at the moment? You launched in 2007. Mm. You know, you're going to have your 10th birthday soon. How's the strength of the market that you've kind of been one of the most interesting young players in?
I mean, we can only look at the statistics, and the stats have been, it has grown year on year in the last 10 years. So from like 2004 to 2014, it's grown by, I think it's something like 700%. That's a huge statistic. Yeah. And in the last year, from 2013 to 2014, it's grown almost by 14%. So it's continued to grow year on year on year. And it's continued to diversify. That's what's so interesting about it, is now, you know, where you think it would be the preserve of sort of teenage boys, the market, it's now not. And there's many, many more women going to comic cons, writing graphic novels. There are more women characters like Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that is, you know, that's been a big bestseller this year. I mean, that's been huge, outstripped sales of lots of other comic books in the States. That's very interesting. So the diversification and the broadening of what's being actually published now is indicative of the market, I think.
And people always ask you, why don't you, when are you going to animate, when are these things going to end up on the small screen or the big screen? But some of these things seem so ripe for being animated.
Yeah, they do. That's the problem with animation, though, is it's so expensive.
Right.
But yeah, I'd love for some of our books to be animated. It'd be obviously fantastic.
Self-Made Heroes just got the right name for that as well.
Yes.
Wasn't it? It's the empire is small, but it's growing.
It will grow.
Yeah, indeed. I'm Emma McKay from Self-Made Hero. Thank you very much.
Thank you for talking
us through it, and congratulations on the most amazing thing. And not wanting to cheapen this interview in the slightest sense, Christmas is around the corner. What are your two sort of hot tips for big sellers in the next couple of months?
Okay, well, we've got an interesting, I wouldn't call it a graphic novel, but an interesting book we just put out. It's called One Year Wiser. It's by a Huffington Post blogger and Zen Buddhist practitioner, and it's 365 illustrated meditations. And that is a gorgeous hardback gift book for Christmas, which I'd recommend thoroughly.
I'm feeling calmer just at the sound of it.
Yes.
Okay. Emma, well, thank you very much again. We can end it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rob. Thanks.
That was Emma Haley, boss of Self-Made Hero. Why? Because we're answering the question, just how popular are graphic novels? Now we're off to the shops to see how graphic novels are selling. Waterstones is the largest book retailer in the UK with over 275 stores nationwide. We sent reporter Henry Reece Sheridan to its grand flagship store in London's Piccadilly to meet their graphic novels buyer, Kate McHale.
What publishers do you look to for good quality publications when you're sourcing graphic novels for Waterstones?
Well, I think the main thing for us, actually, given that there's a huge amount of publishing in graphic novels, is actually to get a fantastic range of them. So we don't want one area to be particularly kind of overwhelming the others. And there's so much out there and basically something for everyone that really we're looking for the best from everyone. And luckily there's loads of that to choose from.
And in terms of factors pertaining to like the book itself, do you find particular types of illustration or particular storylines do particularly well? Or do you want to target particular types of graphic novel in terms of genre?
Certainly. I mean, over the last couple of years, other areas of pop culture have fed so much into this area of publishing and really kind of expanded the audience that a lot of it comes from the expanded universe of the films and the TV that's brought a kind of much wider readership and people who are sort of hungry, not only for, you know, the main sort of Batman, Superman story, but things that feed into those storylines. So we're always looking for kind of the most interesting publishing around those areas because we know that a lot of people are looking for them. But at the same time, we're also looking for original stories and beautiful publications, and you know, different publishers will do this, will focus on a kind of a particular area. I mean, you know, you'd go to Marvel for the films, obviously, but you'd go to sort of people like sort of Fantagraphics and Nobrow and Vintage for the beautiful production, and maybe more of a focus on the artwork. People like Image and some of the newer kind of publishers coming through for sort of the more original storytelling, the kind of the zanier ideas. And again, it's just about getting a good balance and thinking about the fact that so many more people are reading graphic novels now that you really do need to be focusing on all the different areas and getting the best from each one.
In terms of the way readers and customers relate to graphic novels, you know, my perception is that it's quite different to the way in which, for example, readers of literary fiction relate to the authors and books in that genre. Do you think that perception is accurate? If so, why? If not, why not?
It's probably more true to say that in something like literary fiction, you would look at an author's previous title to get an idea of the strength of the feeling for that author. And that is, I'd say that's probably a bigger consideration in some ways than in graphic novels, because actually you are kind of looking for the story. And particularly given that you don't just have one creator for a graphic novel, you have in most cases two, sometimes one, sometimes three, sometimes four, because you have sort of illustrators and creators and writers. So you do have kind of, you know, an illustrator who will be having a brilliant moment or a writer who will be writing a sort of similar feel of a story. And, you know, you think, oh, he's now moved on to this property. That's going to be really interesting given what he'd done previously. But it's a bit more complicated. It's certainly true to say that, you know, people have their favourite authors. And yeah, I mean, there's, you know, the strength of the kind of conventions shows that.
You've mentioned that the audience for comics is getting broader and broader, and graphic novels. Do you see that reflected in the kinds of people that are coming into the store and asking about graphic novels and buying them?
Yeah, I think so. I think, to be honest, I mean, a wide variety of people are reading these and have been for a long time. I think now we're lucky enough to have more, and the publishing is increasingly starting to reflect that.
And in terms of countries that you look to for good publishers of graphic novels, are there particular countries that have an especially strong graphic novel publishing sector, or where there's a lot of writers coming from, a lot of illustrators coming from, or is there quite a broad distribution across the world?
It's quite a broad distribution. Obviously, a lot of, by its nature, quite a lot is coming out of America, because that's where the big houses are based. But we're fortunate enough to have a great comic scene here in the UK as well. A few publishers based, you know, specifically in London and elsewhere. I think we don't so much see stuff coming out of Europe. Not that there's not fantastic comics and graphic novels coming from there, but they've never had quite as much of an impact on the UK market. I think there's a different sensibility there that maybe it hasn't quite crossed over in the same way.
And in terms of the interaction between graphic novels and e-book and e-readers, first of all, are graphic novels published in e-form? And second of all, do you think that the advent of e-readers and e-books has changed people's relationship towards graphic novels? Perhaps people appreciate the printed form of a graphic novel more now?
Yes, I think so. So there are e-forms, and I think particularly if you're reading a sort of, if you're a weekly comic reader, that can, you know, that can be quite useful, because, you know, if you're a heavy reader reading ones that come out weekly and you're not near a local comic shop as well, particularly, that can be quite useful. But obviously you do have to have a colour reader in most of the cases for that to sort of make any kind of sense. And I do think across the board the production on graphic novels is so beautiful, and, you know, it'd be like getting a print of your favourite artist. You are still going to buy that print even though you could Google it. I think there is a difference there. I know I'm certainly a collector of things and I like to own these beautiful objects, and I think a lot of people do as well. But, I mean, that's not to say that it hasn't also had a really positive impact in other ways. I mean, one of our bestsellers at the moment started off as a free webcomic and built its audience that way. It's interesting to see how these things are interacting.
Okay, finally, as a fan of graphic novels, you can just give us a list of who might be some writers and illustrators to look out for, who's hot at the moment, and who you think is doing really good work.
Sure, well, I'm actually just catching up on the latest issue of Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples, which, I mean, if you're not reading it, then you're not reading comics. It's just fantastic. It's science fiction, and not just kind of one of the best comics of recent times, but probably the best, one of the best pieces of science fiction we've had. Also this month, we've got the new Sandman from Neil Gaiman, obviously, and J.H. Williams, which just promises to be absolutely beautiful. And obviously that's a long-running story, but I think it's going to bring something really new to it.
That was Kate McHale, graphic novels buyer at Waterstones Bookstores. After break, we'll meet graphic novelist Carrie Fransman to find out how the makers are mastering their medium and where business is booming for them. Stay tuned.
South African architects Gawie and Gwen Fagan designed and built their family home on a dramatic spot between Table Mountain and the ocean. To celebrate the publication of The Monocle Guide to Cozy Homes, we sent a filmmaker to Cape Town to explore the sculpted forms, palpable materiality, and harmony with nature that make this eclectic residence stand out.
I've never consciously tried to work in a Cape vernacular, but the work is probably very much Cape in terms of substantial heavy walls, white colour, which was traditional. If you look at it from below, you'll see the shape of the roof relates very directly to the surrounding landscape. It's totally different, but it's very akin to our Cape Dutch gables. So I think subconsciously, it's a Cape house.
DS, Vernacular Architecture with a Difference, showcasing now in the film section of monocle.com.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Bound. Today, we're taking the temperature of the graphic novel industry. We're going to end things with the author's perspective. Carrie Fransman is a graphic novelist and comic creator. Her books, Death of the Artist and The House That Groaned, are beautifully illustrated dark stories that explore hedonism, body image and contemporary life, but also celebrate creativity and visual storytelling. She talks to producer Holly about what a graphic novel can do that a written novel simply can't. And what bridges the gap between online and offline publishing?
I think visual storytelling has many layers. I think on the surface it can appear quite simplistic. You know, a child can pick up a comic and understand it, and people from all over the world can pick up a comic and understand it to some degree, which you can't obviously do with normal written novels. And I think that's one of the most exciting things about the medium, really. I've read graphic novels from, you know, Korea, Malaysia, all over the world in a way which I've not read books from those countries. So it kind of opens your eyes to voices from everywhere. And you can literally see the writers and illustrators' worlds. I think that's the most exciting thing.
And when you're making it, how do you decide on the balance between pictures and words? Because obviously I've got one of your books here and, you know, some pages it's just pure illustration, and then sometimes we've got speech bubbles, how do you decide when words are needed in these books?
I think it's nice to be able to play with that. You get some graphic novelists who really are quite word heavy, people like Posy Simmons. She'll have pages of text and maybe a few illustrations around them, and then other times she'll have huge big illustrations with very few or no words. And you know, there's some illustrators who really prefer pictures and some people who prefer writing. For me, it's always the story is the most important thing, and I'll try and get my story across, I guess, through a really rubbish mix of some illustrations and some words, and I'm just trying to get the story across and in the only way I know how.
And I suppose graphic novels are quite often associated with, you know, a certain subculture and I guess to tell maybe quite dark stories. Do you think there's certain subjects that graphic novels really suit?
I think, you know, comics and graphic novels, they're not a genre, they're a medium. So just in the same way you can walk into a comic book shop and you can read biographies, journalism, you can read historical comics, you can read cooking comics, comics which are humorous, dark ones, there's absolutely everything there. But I think probably you'll be familiar with quite a few dark graphic novels because it's a kind of underground subculture.
So let's move on to some of your work. What sort of subjects do you like to write about?
Dark things, actually. Although I'd like to, yeah, say that there's a wide range available out there. I kind of go for, having studied psychology and sociology, I really am interested in characters. I have a lot of different characters in each of my books. The House That Groaned had five characters who were kind of dealing with their bodies and different issues surrounding that, with gender, sexuality, fear of death. So I had a grandmother who would blend into the background. I had, you know, a man called a diseasophile who was kind of attracted to women who were sick or dying. You know, all these kind of weird people, which I guess reflected our own society. And then my most recent book, which was published this year by Jonathan Cape, was Death of the Artist. And I pretended to be five different characters. And I drew the story through five different pairs of eyes and five different styles, ranging from photography to watercolours and collage.
I mean, I know for that story, the whole purpose about it was that they were all different styles. But do you think that it's important for a graphic novelist to kind of find their style and stick with it?
Yeah, I think the whole adopting a style and sticking with it is kind of often recommended by illustration lecturers and in art school as a kind of way of branding yourself. And so I think, you know, that can be really important. Personally, I love the fact that you can play with tone of voice when you play with style. I think you can draw in different tones of voices and you can try very bleak, moody styles for kind of a more bleaker story and more colourful styles for a different one. I think it's a really important tool along with typography and, you know, art direction and all these other things which we use when drawing graphic novels.
That was graphic novelist Carrie Fransman, and her latest book, Death of the Artist, came out earlier this year, published by Jonathan Cape. This has all been in service, of course, of the question, how popular are graphic novels? And it's one of those questions we asked because, frankly, we thought we knew the answer. Graphic novels are very popular, growing in sales as people fall back in love with paper and with those important artifacts, books themselves. Graphic novels have embraced the mainstream and changed the way that many literary writers work, pictures or none. Graphic novels are popular, all right. Go and take a browse at your local bookshop and you'll find humour, beauty, the spooky, the sacred and the profane. My favourite, Wilson by Daniel Clowes. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was Holly Fisher, never without a thought bubble. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound and thank you very much for tuning in.